This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome, everybody. It's another day to change the world. Today's episode is with someone I call an ambassador for humanity. His name is Adam Siddique. He's a good friend of mine, and I've seen what he does in terms of making contributions to the world in a positive way, how he promotes love, how he promotes togetherness, how he promotes family. And we get to talk about all that. He just co-wrote a fascinating book called Shackled with his grandfather, and it details his grandfather's journey from being imprisoned for over 20 years and how he was able to navigate that and turn that imprisonment into an education opportunity. It's a true story of the power of what we can do as humans. And just a reminder that we are more than enough. And I really love the conversation we had. It's about 15 minutes-ish, but it's really, really worth it. So I hope you enjoy it. And please, please, please remember to put a smile on 5 people's faces. Yes, I said it. All right, go enjoy the episode.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is a friend of mine, but also a very much a legend in making, if he's not a legend already. His name is Adam Siddique, and he's a creative storyteller and writer. He's the author of Shackled, A Journey from Political Imprisonment to Freedom, which tells the story of his grandpa overcoming great adversity. 20 years of political imprisonment, starting at the age of 6. Wow. He's the host of the Soulfully Optimized Life podcast, a huge fan of a great Sufi poet called, I'm going to butcher his name, but Jalaluddin Muhammad Baqi, popularly known as Rumi. Many of you do know Rumi. And he's a lover of mysteries of the cosmos and consciousness. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you, Tayo. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is mine, man. You are a very much enlightened individual. I know from the moment I've met you, the conversations we always have they're always deep, philosophical type of things. And it makes a lot of sense why Rumi is someone that you are inspired by. But take me back to the beginning. When you first knew what you wanted to do, what was that like?
Totally. All right. Let's see. I'm going to jump back way, way, way back for a moment. So my parents, they immigrated from Afghanistan over here. My dad was first to Germany. My mom was here in LA, and they met over here later on. And then I'm the first product of their union. And so I grew up pretty much just in the Afghan community here in California, so I didn't really understand or fit into American culture at all. I didn't really start learning English till I was 6, but what really got me into the culture in the beginning was, I guess as funny as it sounds, it was Pokemon. Mm. One day I just saw a kid, he had a Lunchables box, and on the back of the box, there was one of those push out kind of school cardboard square kind of cards. They had some promotion going on with Pokemon at the time.
Yeah.
And it was a Blastoise. And then he also had a Blastoise Pokemon card, and he showed it to me. And, you know, I don't really speak English at all at this point, and I thought it was the coolest thing. So I looked at the name. I saw it said Pokemon. Like, I went right away and, like, asked my mom if I could go to Toys R Us and buy some Pokemon cards. And that led me on to eventually, by the time I was 7 and 8 years old, starting a business. I was selling Pokemon cards on eBay. I had an eBay store for it. And I was doing consulting for people. You could call it consulting. I didn't even know what the word consulting meant back then. But like, I was just helping out people with getting rare Pokemon in the game and like getting hacks. Like, they can get infinity rare candies, which, if anyone remembers that, it's like one rare candy levels your Pokemon up by one level. So I was able to help them out so they get all their Pokemon maxed out to the highest level. And I'd get paid like $5 for it or a couple batteries so I can keep playing my own Game Boy. The reason I bring this up is, like, I knew back around here beforehand, just watching my dad and everything and grandpa, so that I wanted to do something that involved entrepreneurship. Actually, one of the earliest journal entries I wrote was that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. The first one I wrote was I wanted to be a Pokemon master. I knew my priorities. But but I also knew that I wanted to be a writer, and I used to actually write books. I used to write poetry, and I also used to write books about dinosaurs, and I would sell them. And so, like, I had all these like little entrepreneurial adventures from the age of about 5 or 6 up till like 9 or 10. And I was still like trying things out in middle school. But back around then, I pretty much knew that whatever I was going to do is going to be through service as an entrepreneur. And that I just loved writing, but I never really at the time thought that, you know, I could be a professional writer or an author. I just kind of was like, oh, this is fun. I make a couple bucks here. But anyway, you fast forward. Sophomore year of college for me, when I was 19 years old, from like the second day of me moving into my home with my roommates, I started having these intense, vivid, lucid dreams. I mean, so vivid to the point where, like, I still remember this one dream I had. And in the dream, I was the combination of Superman and Batman. Ooh. So I had a Batman outfit with a Superman cape. And I was flying with the Superman. I was flying like Superman. With the, you know, the one fist out and the other one kind of like pulled back position.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was flying like hundreds of miles per hour. And in the dream, like, tears were flowing down my cheeks, and like, I woke up because tears were flowing down my cheeks, not because I was like crying or any kind of emotion, but literally because my body registered it as me flying through the air at like 200 or 300 miles per hour. And so I always say that because it was super vivid. Like, I felt like I lived the dreams. And all these dreams, and like over like the course of like 3 months, I was like really documenting all my dreams. I wrote them all into like a composition journal. And I noticed a pattern with them all, even the ones with like Superman and stuff. And the pattern was, I felt that there was a bigger message being conveyed to me through my dreams. And the message was to leave college, ditch the traditional academic system, pack up a backpack and go and travel around the world and gain a real world kind of education, where I learn from everything from that life offers, plus a variety of mentors in different areas and fields. You mentioned that you had just interviewed Jay Abraham beforehand. I actually found out about Jay at this time, not knowing that Jay's son and I went to high school and he was hanging out with my roommate sometimes. I didn't connect the dots, but it's kind of interesting how it worked out. But that was like one of the biggest inflection points of my life when I was 19. And so I did drop out of college. I had acquired like a number of mentors in my life, be it virtually or be it people who were actually, I was just checking in with on the regular via email or phone calls or Skype, and just learning from them. And I kind of went out and I just started experiencing everything for myself and wanting to grow and develop myself to be the best man I could be. That was really the main focus for that. And from there, I started blogging and writing a lot. And that leads up to now is I really started that writing journey like about 7 years ago, 2011. And I've had articles featured on pretty much every major publication. I now have this book that I've written alongside my grandpa. I've been fortunate to be able to interview, you know, some of the world's greatest leaders and entrepreneurs like Tony Robbins, Gary Vaynerchuk, Seth Godin, Jack Canfield, and a wide variety of other people. Just trying to like paint the picture of like the starting point for there.
Wow. I love your story. And I, you know, there are many things I want to unpack there. So when you said Pokemon was sort of that, your first really experience with connecting with people.
Yep.
I always love those type of stories because, you know, a lot of people that come on the show, a lot of people that are fans of the podcast are people that, in a sense, identify with several cultures. And at one point in their lives, they felt like the minority or the outsider. And
yeah.
You felt like that a lot. I felt like that a lot often as well. So I'm curious if you can extrapolate from that lesson. How do you feel like in today's world of globalization and diversity, how can people who feel like outsiders make themselves feel like they're part of something?
Totally. Well, so I really like your slogan, use your difference to make a difference.
Right.
I highly recommend everyone to embrace that difference. But to connect with other people, I actually believe that now more than ever, despite what you see on the media or like CNN and stuff like this, I feel like more than ever today, different is sexy. Mm. And I think that uniqueness is what's being celebrated more and more. And so I actually think, as contradictory as this might sound, I think the best way to feel like you're a part of a bigger thing is to be 100% you. I feel people will recognize that authenticity because like we look at a rainforest and a rainforest has so much biodiversity.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much in just one little acre of a rainforest. It's ridiculous how much diversity is in there, but it's all of life there is flourishing. It's flourishing. It's flourishing more than, you know, in other climates. And I think it's flourishing because of this radical diversity. So I'm a huge subscriber to the notion of be you, be all of you, you know, every different shade of you, every different part of you, everything of you. Because I feel like when we can be ourselves 100%, we acknowledge the uniqueness that's part of the bigger web of life. And so does the web of life. And I feel like that's one of the biggest gifts that we can give to the world is just 100% you.
Love that message so much. I love it. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, be 100% yourself. That's what's truly sexy. Okay. All right, Adam.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Your grandfather, we're going to dive into the book. Your grandfather is an inspirational man. And I say this, one of the reasons I even connect with the story beyond the fact that he's just remarkable is when I was, you know, Pokemon was like that for you. I grew up in two military dictatorships in Nigeria. And, you know, in the state of chaos, I was looking for heroes and Nelson Mandela was mine, right? The late Nelson Mandela. And he spent 27 years in jail. So I'm listening to your grandfather's story. I'm listening. I'm like, man, these two figures of history are just astonishing to me in how you find a way to really be symbols of humanity even after being in prison for so long. So talk about the book. Talk about what you've learned from the book and how people can actually find out more or get the book.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, yeah, a little bit about the book. This book... So I wrote this book over the course of about 4 years, but I knew I wanted to write it for about 8 years, seven and a half years, I'd say, with my grandpa. I first heard my grandpa's story when I was 6 years old. And I remember, you know, sitting down on the living room and my grandparents were there, and both sides, both grandparents. And then I had like some aunts and uncles there, and you know, just a bunch of family kind of came over. And my grandpa was telling somebody about, you know, some time in his life story. And I was just kind of paying attention. I was listening. And that's when I found out that when my grandpa was 6 years old, he was imprisoned. And I'm there. I'm 6 years old. I'm like kind of like crawling around the floor, you know, pretending I'm some Pokemon as I'm listening to this story. And I instantly, like, instant shockwave hit me. And I was just like, I have no problems in life. I just knew, and like from that day on, I just knew no matter what I face, there's no problems. And I knew because I looked at as my grandpa was telling the story, and like right after, like he's like telling some jokes and he's laughing. I'm like, he's so optimistic and so joyful and so kind and loving that, and he did, like, not a single ounce of complaining comes from, you know, all the horrors he'd faced. And I just was like, if that's what his approach is to life, you know, like, I don't have any problems. Yeah. And that, because of that, because of that one experience there, it has shaped, it's shaped my entire life. It literally, it's made me in the face of any kind of challenge or adversity to, it's always been kind of like a beacon of light for me, and always a reminder that, optimism is always an opportunity. You know, we can always make an opportunity out of anything that comes. That's kind of my grandpa's message. It's like we always have the opportunity to make an opportunity out of anything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's like the very early inception point that I just knew that this was something very, very important for me to discover more of. And by the time I was in high school, my grandpa had written his memoirs, and they're in Farsi, and I couldn't read Farsi. And I was like, you know, I really want to read your book. And he said, I'm translating to English. I'll give you the first copy. So over the course of like the next year or two, he would visit. I'd always ask him, is the book ready? He's like, no, it's taking time. And then his book was translated, his memoirs were translated in English. And I was like, I was really excited to finally dive into my grandpa's story, only to realize that the translator had failed to communicate so much, like pretty much the entirety of the emotion that goes into the story. And I had also pretty much like left out like an entire 100 page chunk of the history. And that really bothered me. So I just said, you know what? I want to write the book with you. I know there's a slight language barrier because his English isn't 100% fluent as much when it comes to speaking. And he's still very, very fluent. He's actually better speaking than my dad. And my Farsi, I'd forgotten my Farsi when I adapted into American culture. So, but I could understand a decent amount of it. So we started writing. I started interviewing him, and I started writing everything down. And over the course of a couple of years, I ended up with this book. And what really took me, gave me a greater incentive to write the book, actually, and this is going to just kind of go a step deeper, is I started somewhere around the time that I really started writing the book a lot, or when I took it like full, I would call it, I made it like a bigger priority. I was getting involved with some type of modality called network spinal analysis. It's developed by Donnie Epstein, and I started going to some of his programs. I started learning more about the nervous system and more about human development and epigenetics and things like this, and how that affects us and how that was specifically affecting me, specifically because my grandparents were imprisoned. And so I learned how, and this is just kind of, this kind of been more of an evolving study over, I think, the past few decades. They've actually showed it with Holocaust survivors that the, not their children, but their grandchildren often end up showing very similar gene expressions and having similar, like, health challenges related to what their grandparents had faced in the Holocaust. It's almost like the genes just skipped a generation. And so when I found out about this, I found out that in a sense we can, when we get our nervous system optimized and free from all this interference, we could, in a sense, rewrite the story that's been going on with our family lineage from one that has been conditioned with more of a survivalistic approach due to the heavy traumas that we face, to one that's conditioned with love and trust and abundance in the universe. And so that's when I really started taking it with a greater focus. And so, as a result, my family and I, we all started getting more involved with the care. I noticed that this was actually helping my grandpa remember more of the depths of what his experiences were and liberate a lot of the emotional pain that was kind of uncovered that he almost kind of forgotten about. And so as I'm writing this book, you can almost see it as like our family was healing together to create a new story for all the future generations. And there's a number of really trippy stories that come out of that just alone. But the overall gist of this book that I've written, my grandpa's life, is, yeah, he was 6 years old when he was imprisoned. It lasted for 20 years. It happened after a grand betrayal took place with the one person who took the throne, as opposed to the king returning after a civil war. And the reason that my grandpa was involved in this situation is because my great-grandfather and his brothers, they were all they're all ambassadors. My great-grandfather was the ambassador to Berlin. I have another great-grandfather who was the ambassador to Paris and Moscow. Another one was the ambassador to Ankara. And then the other one was the deputy interior minister. And they're all working together with the king. But ultimately, my great-grandfather, my grandpa's father, and the king, they were best friends since they were in high school. And they had dreamed of creating a new Afghanistan. And the reforms and the ideas that they had was basically to build Afghanistan up and to build the East up. But to first do that, they knew that they had to get rid of the English, the British were still controlling a lot of Afghanistan. Ultimately, they controlled the trade. So the previous kings kind of like basically got a salary, but the British controlled the trade, and that limited Afghanistan from being able to do business with other countries and develop relationships. And so, there was a series of three wars that happened, three Anglo-Afghan wars. The first one happened in the 1800s. Second one happened in the late 1800s. And the last one was, a lot with the leadership of one of my great grandfathers, in the army, and then the king, of course. So they declared a new independent Afghanistan. It was, in August of 1919. But with these reforms, like one of the first rules that they made was, the king, actually his very, very first edicts that he made, he wanted to focus on women's rights and women equality. And some of the people who were more extremist to the older school style of thinking, the Middle Eastern kind of thinking, they were opposed to this. And so, you know, there are some conflicts going on, but a lot of the people saw it as very progressive. Anyways, to make a long story short, a combination of British intelligence working with somebody who was previously part of the king's, technically a general for the king, alongside two of the biggest religious influencers in Afghanistan at the time, developed some sort of conspiracy that led to a civil war taking place. And after that civil war, that once general ended up claiming the throne, executing and imprisoning all the elders related to anybody who was part of the King's team, mm-hmm. and exiling anybody who was out of the country. And along that was my grandpa, who was 6 years old. He was in prison, but he was not even the youngest to be imprisoned. One of his younger cousins was born while they were in house arrest. First year was house arrest. And she was only 4 months old when they were moved to the first prison, where for a week they were left without food and clean water. They had to drink like putrid water just to survive. And that was really just a will kind of thing. They were kind of lucky to, they're all really lucky to survive that. So that's like a brief gist of the build up to the book. And then the rest of it, it covers everything from my grandpa's story, from him being 6 years old when he was first imprisoned all the way up till his escape, during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, when he is 53 at the time. But it shows, it's very much like a personal narrative, very much first person storytelling. So it's a lot of story. However, so the political history that you see in the book is all, a lot of it's coming just from first person narrative, at least the parts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That, you know, he's alive from. So you get to kind of experience everything, not just what he went through and how he overcame it, but also what exactly happened and what are the initial rocks thrown at the wall, per se, that caused Afghanistan to collapse and still now be in this current state where there was just, there was two bombings in the past week, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of gives you an insider look of what exactly happened, just told as it is, as it happened. No dramatization, nothing like that.
Wow. It's always interesting hearing stories like that, because the moment you said your grandfather was starting to remember things that he might have suppressed or didn't, you know, for some reason just managed to just forget. It was very personal for me, because it that's something that I've done in the last few years, especially now that I've done a lot of speaking, is I've had to revisit a lot of things that happened in the first 9 years of my life. And there are many things that I knew as they were happening, I just had chosen not to remember. And mm-hmm. when you said that, I was like, man, that is so true. Like when you go through a traumatic experience where you hear people die, you hear curfews, you see people that are losing their lives because of their opinions, a part of you as a kid just shuts that out of your mind. And sometimes people don't think, like, you know, a lot of times in Nigeria, we don't really, a lot of people don't necessarily believe in therapy, but I mean, I'm different in that sense, but I haven't had therapy, but that has been therapeutic, if that makes any sense for me. Just going back.
Yeah,
I can only even imagine that mine was just 9 years. Your dad was, you know, 20 years. I can only imagine what that remembering experience was like for him.
Yeah, it was, I mean, the main experiences, like my grandpa is super sharp when it comes to facts. Like he wrote two history books, actually. It's titled The Suppressed History of Afghanistan. It's two volumes, like over 1,000 pages. But when it came to the memories that he suppressed, they're very vivid ones. They're stories you'll see in the book. A lot of them are like basically like, you know, being there and seeing his cousin die prematurely of tuberculosis. Multiple cousins. And just what that experience was like to be there, almost to go back to being, you know, a kid or a teenager, because various cousins died at various ages. Or is the day that he got the note from his I'll share this real quick. Basically, they found out, so the regime would put anybody in the family who is about 13 or 14 years old, once they entered puberty, they would send them over to the adult prison. So, you know, over here in the U.S., you have juvenile. Obviously, they're all wrongly imprisoned, too. That's one other thing. But you have juvenile here. You know, they don't send anyone to an adult prison over here in the U.S. unless you're 18 years old. However, you know, 13, 14 years old, imagine going to a prison where, you know, over here, half of the occupants are political prisoners. Basically all of them were imprisoned just because they were part of the regime. I mean, one of the people that was imprisoned, that was one of the nearby cellmates of my grandpa, he was imprisoned because he wired a telegraph to the previous king saying, congratulations, your majesty, Kabul has been conquered, the war is over. They imprisoned him just because he wired a telegraph that he was ordered to wire.
That's crazy.
To that king. That's why it's like it's a ridiculous level of corruption that took over. And you know, they've done a pretty good job of making sure it was not heard during the time they were there. Cause you know, a lot of times when someone runs the country, they can also write the history books.
Right.
And that's something that's kind of unspoken in a lot of cases. Cause if you speak out and you're in that country, you end up in that cellar, you end up dead. But you know, obviously they're not there, we're not there. And I got the story out. So, nonetheless, what I was trying to get to is that he was just a kid when a lot of times seeing these experiences, and his sister and his cousin, they worked out a strategy because the kids were, you know, teenagers were sent to the adult prison. But all the women, teenagers and older women, were kept in a women's prison. They separated men and women. So the children stayed with the women too. And they found out that they can sneak notes just to like do a checkup status with each other every week, because the guards would take the dirty clothes parcels from the boys and bring it over to the women's prison for the mothers to wash, dry, and fold. And send it back. And my grandpa's sister said, wait, we can get like a piece of cloth, write something with a reed pen, which they smuggled the reed pens in there too, sew it into this parcel and do it in a way where it won't rustle or make any sound. So the guards, when they check and make sure nothing's being transferred, they won't find out about it. So they had this secret way of communicating from the prisons. And, you know, one of the memories that my grandpa forgot about, and it took a while for him to open up and talk about, and it was very emotional for him, was the day that he received a note that his older brother died of tuberculosis in the jail, and the fact that he had not seen his older brother for years, and the fact that they would never find the burial site for his older brother because they just took him off and threw him out somewhere and buried it up. So that was, these are the kind of things that, you know, having that kind of care network spinal analysis, is what Donnie Epstein has taught. It,
wow.
It really helped him and all of us. It's painful. It's emotionally painful, but it helped, I guess, us move through it. And for my grandpa, kind of uncover the things that he had to push down at the time. It was just, otherwise he'd be living in constant grief and terror for 20 years. And he pushed it down by, not necessarily forcibly pushing it down. He just chose to focus instead on learning. And that was kind of his way of finding light in prison, is since the time he was 7 years old, well, even 6 years old, but 7 years old when they moved him from house arrest to the prison, his aunt decided to be like, hey, I don't want to see us suffer and cry anymore. You know, we obviously, this is what happened, and we don't know what's going to happen with our fate. We can only, all we can do is we can trust in God, and that we we can, we have to make the most of our situation. It says we can't wait for everything to work out. You know, at the best, put your trust and faith that something will work out for us, but we have to make the most of our situation. So she convinced the water carrier who was bringing in the water skin and filling up, the jugs of water for everybody with clean water. She convinced them when the guards weren't paying attention to bring reed pens, ink, and papers so they could actually kind of develop an underground school. But before they got to that point, she made like a school where she got made three different teaching pods of the older kids, teaching the younger kids how to read, write, and speak fluently. First with Farsi, so they learned the Farsi alphabet by using pebbles on the ground, on the dirt ground. Eventually, they upgraded to using charcoal on the wall, and then finally they were able to get some reed pens, ink, and papers. And so they built that school, and because of this, and because my grandpa was always focused on learning, it was literally like 16 hours a day he was learning, focused on studying, going to classes that were taught by, obviously super informal, but just taught by the university scholars next to his cell when he was a teenager. He left prison learning how to read, write, and speak six languages. And basically, in a sense, you could see it as he graduated almost with like a PhD of literature and philosophy, studying all the works of every philosopher, all the works of all the great poets, and all the great thinkers of of history. And studying in depth the literature. So that's kind of how he made the most of it. And that's kind of when I ask him, like, you know, what do you feel about this time that, you know, 20 years, a lot of time. That's like you're from 6 to 20, almost 26, like 25. You're put away in a jail. He's like, I wasn't put away in a jail. I was in a university.
Wow.
So that's like, you know, it, to me, that's just an example of showing that, you know, no matter what the circumstances are in our life, you know, and there's a lot of people in this world, there's billions of people in this world experiencing horrible circumstances right now. And I think the key is to make the most of it, to make the most of our circumstance, and that we ultimately have the opportunity to choose what things mean to us in our lives. It's a great book that, you know, influenced me a lot. It's titled Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And Viktor Frankl, he was an Austrian psychiatrist, but he was taken into, I think he was taken into Auschwitz, but he was taken into one of the most extreme Holocaust camps. And he documented and paid attention to those who made it and those who didn't. And he said the common thread behind those who made it were that they found a way to put their mind and all their focus beyond this camp and this horrible reality. They put their mind and their focus on a vision, and they focused on something. He said some of the people, their vision was, you know, just being able to see their children or their grandchildren one day. Some of the other people, it was, you know, like being able to finish their university. Some of the other people, it was this or that, you know. So they all had something that they're striving towards. And again, a horrible, 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 horrible situation where basically death is almost certain for everybody. And it is whether, you know, you don't know if one SS officer was just going to come and take you, or if, you know, you just starved to death because of the significantly low amount of food and the horrible nutrition that was offered, or the diseases, any kind of thing could have come from any angle. But he documented that man ultimately has the opportunity and the responsibility to give meaning to their circumstances. And in giving meaning, you can find your freedom.
Wow. Wow. In giving meaning, you can find freedom. My goodness. Yeah. That's amazing. What's the name of the book again?
Oh, that book, that's Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Nice. Viktor Frankl. Oh my gosh. I can't wait, man. I know you're shipping me the book. So I can't wait to get it, man. So where can people get this book?
Yeah, so right now, if you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and depending on which part of the world you're in, whatever the biggest book retailer is that would supply books to you, I would check out their website because the book's on pretty much every major retailer. You can just search Shackled, or you can search my name, Adam Sadiq. You don't have to put the full subtitle. Shackled, it should come up. But for speed, I know Amazon and Barnes & Noble are usually really fast. But yeah, it's just kind of there. Audibles, it's going to be coming out on Audible next week as well. Nice, at least next week as of this recording. So what is that? Today's the 31st. It should be on Audible by like February 5th. Damn. So Audible for that. And then it's already on Kindle. It's on Nook. It's 99 cents on Nook if you have a Nook. So that's kind of the main places. You can also go to my website. I have a direct link to the book. I also have links to, I did this interview series with my grandpa. It's a 12 episode series. I ask him questions about, you know, everything from the first day that he was in prison to how life was before he was in prison to, you know, very specific things like how did he make it through all these years in prison to what advice would he give to other people going through difficult times to what advice would he give to governments and leaders that that want to do the best for their people to, you know, all sorts of different questions in there. And then I also I happily welcome any questions anybody has for my grandpa. I actually want to be recording video answers back for people. So if anyone has a question for my grandpa, if you have a question for my grandpa, Tayo, I can get that answered.
I appreciate that. So, and all they can find that series on your website too, adamsadiq.com.
Yep. Adamsadiq.com.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go, I want to ask you a little bit to, if you can talk about your videos. You also do Humanity is My Family, hashtag Humanity is My Family. Can you talk about the creation of those videos and what you learned from them? Because ladies and gentlemen, these videos have amassed well over 1 million views. They're insanely educational, but also artistic. So what was the process with that? And then maybe we can get more people to share.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So basically, since I was a kid and actually before I could even speak English, I just thought every human being on this planet is my family. I literally just thought everyone was my family. And as a result, you know, you could be 2 years old or 3 years old. I think I was three when I did this. I thought the guy who drove the garbage truck was a family member. And I somehow found fascination in garbage trucks. So, you know, one day my mom was looking everywhere for me and then like looked out the door and she sees me, you know, running butt naked after the garbage truck, like at the end of the street because I just wanted to say hi. So the message has kind of like been in my blood, like in my bones for a long time. I didn't put the words together in that sense. And, you know, I just thought it would be kind of creative to make a video one day. I was like, you know what? I really want to do a DNA test, and I want to use my DNA test as an opportunity to inspire more humanity in the world. My grandpa, he named me Adam. Adam in Farsi, it means human, and it's not a typical name at all. It's a very rare name for anyone to have in Farsi, just because like people are like, why would you name a child human? It's like if my name was in English meant human right now, it just was human. And he said he picked that name because going through everything he went through in life and seeing a lot of things he saw, he said, we need more humans in the world. We need more humanity. So he named me that, his intention being that I'd be a bigger inspiration for humanity. Without me knowing that he named me this, I always kind of had this in me. And so I got my DNA test and, you know, if I just went with the typical kind of thought model that might be presented to most people, of if your parents from here and your parents from here, then you're this much percent this and this much percent this. And if their grandparents from here, this grandparents from here, this and this. Well, for my case, at least from what I knew at face value, I was like, my parents and grandparents and so on are from Afghanistan. So that must mean I'm 100% Afghan. But the reality is that there is no 100% anything, and that we, you know, you can have a strong, like some people have like 94%, you know, a friend of mine was like 94% European Jewish, but 6% was kind of like scattered in different areas. I feel like no matter what, we're always going to have, like a mix of ancestors. And I feel like we're all related because, for instance, like in my DNA test, I had 0% Iberian Peninsula, 0% Africa, and 0% South America. However, if you were to do a DNA test, I'm sure you would have at least a little bit coming from Europe or the Iberian Peninsula or something like that. Just my hunch. But if you had it from even from Iberian Peninsula, you probably have a relative, or even not, even if not, you probably have another relative that's in the gene pool as you, but has another gene pool extending out to some of the genes that I share. And somehow, some way, we have, and some line of this massive family tree we call humanity, we are related somehow, some way. And I remember hearing genealogists said that the most distant person to us in the planet is our 50th cousin. And so with all this in mind, I just thought, like, you know what, we're really all family. And if everyone just had that kind of lens, if they were wearing the glasses that when they look through those glasses, they saw everybody as a relative, whether it's like 50th cousin distance or, you know, up to first cousin. I think everyone knows their first cousins, but yeah. It's like, how would people treat each other? And that was my real thing. It's like, how do we treat each other? How do we think of each other? I'm like, when we think about how we generally treat our family, it's like, you generally, even if you're mad at them about something, it's like there's a certain level of love and respect that's unparalleled. So I just, my real intention behind it was to expand that level of love and respect so it influences a bigger circle, and that bigger circle literally being all of humanity. So I got my DNA test, and that's, I decided to wear some sort of costume or outfit that was resemblant of that area. Whether not nearly focusing on it being having to be modern day. So some of the things I just tried to make it look like it was just very, very much like had an ancestral feeling to it in terms of the outfit. And that video has now, it was directly uploaded by another page and shared. I think if you combine the view counts, it's kind of close to 2 million. And then the one I did with my grandpa, I mean, he named me this. He knew this before I was born. He puts a message out there saying humanity is our family and humanity is my family. And he put humanity is my family in all the six languages that he learned in jail. That's what I thought was really special about it. That video has on my page close to like 2.3 million views, and it was shared somewhere else where it's, I think, like at least over half a million, close to a million. So you could, if you count out the big number in the end, it's like about 5 million views. Wow. Collectively off these two videos.
Man, and yeah, I'm definitely going to make sure I get the links from you so I can put in show notes. But those videos, you all should check them out. They're really, really great, you know, short stories of just what it means to be a human today. And I think it's a great reminder in today's climate. So, I love what you've done, and I love your heart, and I love your philosophical mindset. I'm going to make sure to put links to the show notes, links to your book and interviews to your dad, your granddad, as well as the videos in the show notes. But before we let you go, I ask all my guests this question: how they use their differences to make a difference. So, you know, my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. So
yep.
How do you use your difference to make a difference?
Totally. The way I'm using my difference to make a difference, I see it can be expanded in many different ways. I mean, I live with the motto of I'm going to be 100% me, period. There's no negotiations, no 99%. But really, the way that I'm using my difference to make a difference right now is to get this story out of my lineage. Ultimately, I just want to read to you what I put for my bio on my book, just to show you a bigger intention behind this book, a bigger reason of how I want to use the way I grew up to inspire change in the world. And I wrote, it says, Adam Siddiq is the grandson of Khalid Siddiq. Adam wrote Shackled alongside his grandfather, Khalid, a shared journey they hope will inspire others to become more involved in the sacred bond between the youth and their elders. I feel like, you know, I was raised by my grandparents most of the time growing up. I spent an enormous amount of time with my grandpa. I lived with him for a year during writing this book. And I just feel like there's been a gap between the youth and their elders. And I just want to help remind them that there's so much wisdom and so many gifts that can be given and received both ways, not just receiving the wisdom from your grandparents, but also you giving them something that's unique to your generation. We as millennials, we are extremely tech savvy for many of us. One of the things I'm doing with my grandpa is I'm making a podcast for my grandpa, where it's going to be 100% him and his messages and his episodes in Farsi, his original language. I can do that because I know how to do it. He doesn't know how to navigate it. There's a lot of equipment, you know, it's a lot of things. So I just want to be an example that there's tremendous value in connecting with your elders and to have fun with the participation of maybe the bigger thing that's being called between you both.
Wow. That's such a beautiful message to share and to hold close to your heart. So thank you for being unapologetic to yourself. Thanks for being an ambassador of humanity. And thank you for this beautiful story that you're sharing with us. So, you know, I can't wait to get this episode out, but also share with the rest of the world.
Thank you, Ty. It was a great pleasure to be on your show.
Pleasure is mine. And ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.